Good morning. We stayed over in London with our daughter and son-in-law, and Emma asked me this morning what I was preaching, and I said the Ten Commandments, and I said, the older you get, the harder it gets. And I don't even know what I mean by that, but this is familiar stuff, I think, for most of us, the Ten Commandments. Like, if I asked you to shout out which ones you remember, I mean, you just heard it, so this shouldn't be too hard. Which Ten Commandments do you remember? No God. What else? No graven images. Do not kill. I thought that would come up first because that one is sort of memorable. It's nice and short. It's right up there with do not shoot arrows into the wall of your house. So it's the Ten Commandments, familiar, yet, I don't know, it's not simple. There's the real difference between short and pithy and simple. And so I want to start to prepare for this sermon, I started reading everything that comes before in Exodus, which is such a story. Oh, it's just my favorite. And so these are the words of God, and the first part that I want to start with is, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And Jeremy, I put this in here just for you because Karl Barth would just, I mean, we're done, right? This is all we need. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And that's so important because that, to me, that's the whole thing is you used to be slaves, whether it's slaves in Egypt or slaves to sin, but God has redeemed us, God has saved us, God has freed us. We do not save ourselves. And that's what struck me the most about this. We do not save ourselves. We love to think that we do, and we do not. So that seems to me to be the foundation of everything else that's coming, is that we do not save ourselves, God saves us. God, us, not the same. I know that sounds really basic, but I get that confused on a very regular basis. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. So there's this great story, like I said, and one of my favorite Bible stories is got to be the Red Sea story. So I just want to tell you how it got to be, briefly, that the Israelites are out wandering in the wilderness. They're not slaves, and they're not in the promised land. They're in between, which is, if you think about, I don't know how you all live, but yeah. Still haven't found what I'm looking for if you're a YouTube fan. Like, we're in that so often in that in-between place. So you remember Joseph in the fancy coat, technicolor dream coat? And he ends up working for Pharaoh, and he works his way through the ranks, not without incident, and becomes in charge of all the food. And then his family comes to Egypt so they can get food. And they stay, and they are fruitful and exceedingly multiplied. And there's tons of them, and the Egyptians don't want so many Israelites around, and they become slaves. So they're slaves. There's loads of them. They still remember that this isn't their home. And they want to go home. They want to be free, but they're slaves. And along comes this dude called, anybody? Moses. And he is going to free the people. And there is every kind, Pharaoh doesn't want to let them go, and there's every kind of drama that you can imagine. There's plagues and frogs and boils on the skin and blood and it's over the top. It really is. The last one is the firstborn dying of every people, animals, everything except for the children of Israel. And finally, all of God's people get out of Egypt, and then they're in the wilderness. There's Pharaoh's army here, and there's the Red Sea here. And I think probably one of my favorite parts is just how real the children of Israel are, because they're out there. God has just done every miracle that you can imagine, and many that we can't, to get them here. And they're looking, and they see the army, and they say, well, wasn't there enough graves in Egypt? Couldn't we have died there? Like, did you have to bring us out in the desert to die? They're whiners. We're whiners. It's them, us. It's the same. So despite this, knowing that everything that God has done to save them, they're just like, what? We're done. God saves them. They, you know how this one goes. They get across the Red Sea. The Red Sea collapses around Pharaoh's army, and the horse and rider are thrown into the sea. At the other side of the sea, it's Miriam, Moses' sister, and Moses and Aaron's sister, is leading all the women in the tambourine dance. I have triumphed. Sing a song to God as he has triumphed gloriously, the horse and rider thrown into the sea, da da da. And the great thing about that one is just as they were whining when they forgot all the great things that God has done, they're also celebrating. Really, they're not, the situation hasn't really changed that much. God has still saved them. They're still out in the middle of nowhere and they have no idea where they're going and they won't get there for a long time. And they're doing the happy dance, which is, isn't that great? Like it's still an in-between place. It's really not much difference than the other side of the Red Sea, but their recognition of what God has done for them is different. So there, that whole backstory, which seems to me is a very important backstory for the Ten Commandments, the people are a little bit further along than the Red Sea. And Moses has gone up on the mountain to meet God, and he comes back with the Ten Commandments. So that's where we're at, and I had to tell you that story because it's one of my favorites, and because I think it makes it gives you a little bit of idea where people are actually at when they get to this story. And there's lots more complaining that happens. I mean, the manna comes as a result of people complaining, and then they say, well, yeah, but there's no meat, and then get quail, and there's a lot of complaining. And just in the chapter before, well, a couple of chapters before, in Exodus 16, is the most honest call to worship, but I think I've used it here, most honest call to worship ever, which is, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumblings. Come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumblings. Yeah. So there's this people, God's people, gathered in the wilderness, and these are real, genuine, up and down on the journey of faith kind of folks. Let's keep going with the commandments. You shall have no other gods before me. I came across a quote from a favorite writer, David Foster Wallace. There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. There's no such thing as not worshiping. So when God is saying, you shall have no other gods before me, I think God knows full well that we're going to worship something. And David Foster Wallace goes on to say that, so we only get to choose what it is we're going to worship. If we choose God, that is the only choice that will not destroy us. And I thought, wow, that's the only choice that will not destroy us. And that we know that to be true. We don't live as if that's true, but at some level, we've got that in there. We can try to worship ourselves or money or power, success, fame. I mean, we could go on and on. We know what all of those things are. But in the end, those choices will destroy us. And that was just really sobering to think of it. Sometimes I want to think of it as being about God, and God desires our worship. And God does desire our worship. But this is also for our own protection, because everything else that we worship will destroy us. So God goes on to spell it out in a few more details. Nope, going to need glasses to get all those words. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the water under the earth. It's a very comprehensive list. When you think of Genesis 2, where there's a list of everything that God made, this is, again, spelling it out just so we don't get confused. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. So there's about 308 sermons just in that verse. No other gods. Do not make yourself an idol. We live surround. I carry an idol with me in my purse. It's got a little case so that in case I drop it, it doesn't break. Some of you might have them too. People sleep with their idols beside them, and we are totally surrounded. I mean, this verse just wallops us across the side of the face. And yet, what do we do with this? I mean, this just grips me. You can see it. God is saying, don't do that. because we are free. God has gone to such extraordinary lengths to get us out of our slavery, and we want to re-enslave ourselves in all kinds of new and imaginative and high-tech ways. And if everything else we worship aside from God will destroy us. The other thing that jumps out of that verse is that sin has consequences. Sin has consequences. It names it right here to the third and fourth generation. If you think of a household, and I'm particularly thinking of the sexual abuse study that we did in Sunday school, that sin has consequences. It just flat out does. And that, I think that's pretty clear in this verse, that it does, and there's some healing that isn't going to happen on this side of the grave, this side of heaven. But that God's loving kindness and grace and mercy is so much bigger than that. The generations that sin will affect, the grace and God's loving kindness goes to thousands. I don't know if that's thousands of generations or people. I actually did some digging around on that, but it's just that God's grace is really, really big, bigger than sin. I think that's the point. So don't make for yourself an idol. You shall not take the name of your Lord, your God, in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. I mean, this one is, don't even know what to say. We break this one all the time. Where in another context, people would have had an acronym for God because God's name is so reverent that we don't even want to spell it out. Now we take the Lord's name in vain in a series of acronyms on our, so that we just are too lazy to spell it out in full. We've gone completely full circle on this one. And yeah, I don't know what to say except that we break this one all the time, routinely. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall work and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So I was thinking about this one. This is I don't know if it's a growing point or my stumbling block, but this is a terrible one for me. And I want to just jump ahead to the thou shalt not murder for a second, because Moses was a murderer. He had killed an Egyptian and buried his body in the sand back in Egypt, and everyone knew it. All the people knew it. All the people hearing the commandments would know it. So God chose a murderer to bring the Ten Commandments to the people, and I thought when I was thinking about this that was a bit rich. God helpfully pointed out to me that having Lori Gunther Reeser preach about the Sabbath keeping was, in fact, exactly the same thing. So I need to say that because I am a restless, driven person who is, my great temptation is to think that it absolutely all depends on me, and if I should not get my list done, that the world would just collapse. So I think you sort of alluded to that in your prayer of confession. So Sabbath, I just needed to say that. I need to get that off my chest. Sabbath keeping is huge. Goodness, if we really are free people can take a day off. Slaves have to work all the time. Free people get to rest. And I know a lot of free people, self-included, who never rest. I mean, literally, they have their work phone on them all the time or their laptop or whatever. I mean, it's, are we free? What are we slaves to? I think God is really forcing us with these verses, or forcing me, and I hope you're hearing some of it. Who are we still slaves? Are we free? Has God redeemed us, and are we living like God has redeemed us? I think that's what this verse gets to. I don't want it to be legalistic about can we go to Fortino's on the Sabbath or not, because I think we'd all be damned to hellfire and damnation if that was a literal thing. But the verse does say that that we should rest and that we should allow other people to rest? And how do we, as God's people who have been saved and redeemed, how do we live that out? So, I think it goes back to the beginning again. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Free people can rest. Free people can rest. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. Now, Sabbath keeping, I think, does help to do this commandment, because it helps me. And at the same time, I'm thinking about the sins of the generations and that honoring your father and mother can be a complicated thing for some of us. So this is another one where I guess preaching this Ten Commandments gets harder the older you get. It's the first commandment that has the promise that things are going to go well with you in the promised land if you can honor the people that have paved the way for you, the work and the sacrifice and the efforts of people who've gone before. And I know that I am here and many of us are here. Well, really, all of us are here. We didn't get here on our own. We did not get here on our own. We had a series of Red Seas and people leading us. We didn't get here on our own. And to live as God's chosen people means honoring God and honoring those people who have come before us to get us to where we are. Honor your father and your mother that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. And God is giving this commandment before they're even there yet. The next verses I grouped together, they're sort of the greatest hits of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. If we were to turn those around and to frame them in the positive sense, it would be honor life, honor marriage, be honest with your property and with your words. Honor life, honor marriage, be honest with your property and with your words. And that might be a good, I don't know how much space you would need to tattoo that on your arms, but that's what I would need. That's what we all need to keep these in front of us. These are the pearl, I don't know how to knit either, Alyssa, but these might be like the pearl and the, I don't know, help me out here, cable. These are the fundamental stitches of how we need to live. Because we are God's people. God has gone to such extraordinary lengths to redeem us and to just serve ourselves and do whatever it takes to get whatever we want. And frankly, when we are lying and stealing and cheating on our spouse and doing all these things, we're doing whatever it takes to get whatever we want, right? But to honor God means not to be slave to everything we want, but to live as God's people. That's what I'm hearing when I read these today. For I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And here is definitely a verse that falls into the category of last but not least. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now, the thing is that it seems to me that much of our economy is based on coveting. I mean, marketing is about we don't have enough, you are not good enough, that only if, you know how this goes, or maybe we are exposed to this thousands and thousands of times a day, that we should have what our neighbors have, we should want what our neighbors want, in fact, that we are possibly disloyal and unpatriotic if we don't do those things. So coveting is huge and insidious and everywhere, and it is a terrible form of idolatry and slavery. I mean, think of how much coveting leads to all of the things, violating the previous commandments, because we want what we don't have, and then we start, it's a chain reaction, it's a dominoes, it all starts with coveting and goes down. But if we can rely on God and remember what God has done for us, and we need to be reoriented to that every single minute of the day, that helps. So let me go back to the first verse again. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. God has redeemed us. That's the good news, my friends. God saves us. We can't save ourselves. Everything else that we try to worship will in fact destroy us. We keep wanting to return to the house of slavery to worship the things that will destroy us because we just can't believe that God loves us the way we are, that God is enough. But God is enough. And so for closing words, I want to remind you, beloved of God, to live as God's people, honoring our God who has redeemed us. Amen.